Greetings and welcome to Our Americas, the weekly report on Latin America and the Caribbean. I'm Mario Murillo. On today's program, we'll have a report on Brazil's landless workers' movement. April 17th marks the two-year anniversary of the massacre of 19 Brazilian peasants in El Dorado de Carajás, and to this date, nobody has been brought to justice. We'll hear from a leader of the MST who'll tell us about the mass mobilizations that were organized in Brazil to commemorate the massacre. Then we'll talk to some participants of the International Women's Solidarity Conference held in Havana. Over 3,000 women from 81 countries gathered in the Cuban capital for several days of workshops addressing the struggles of working women throughout the world. Later in the program, we'll present an interview with the author of a new book about the dirty war in Argentina called The Lexicon of Terror. Essayist and translator Marguerite Feitlowitz will tell us about the language used to justify the actions of the Argentine dictatorship. All of this and more coming up next, but first here are some stories making headlines this week in Our Americas.
With news for Our Americas, I'm Sarah Gill.
And I'm Walter Krockmal. Mexican indigenous communities in the Chiapas Highlands are bracing themselves for a possible army assault. The army has moved 60 elite combat soldiers, armored military vehicles, and artillery helicopters around several villages near the highland community of La Realidad. A few days earlier, on April 14th, police raided the pro-Zapatista autonomous community of Taniperlas, one of many municipalities that has set up its own government, challenging federal rule. 10 Mexicans and 12 foreigners were arrested in the raid, most of them manning a roadblock to guard against military incursions into the area. The charges against the 10 Mexicans range from inciting subversion to damaging property. Most of the foreigners were immediately deported. They included Americans, Canadians, Spaniards, Norwegians, Belgians, and Germans. Tensions have been mounting in Chiapas since the December massacre in Acteal of 45 unarmed peasants by paramilitary groups. Autonomous communities in the area have vowed to defend themselves and their self-rule. These latest offensives by the Mexican police and the military on pro-Zapatista indigenous communities have all been close to the site of the December massacre.
The first U.S. Catholic priest to have a parish in Cuba since the revolution is packing his bags and heading back to the U.S. Jeremy Scahill reports.
Father Patrick Sullivan says he is being forced out of his parish in Santa Clara by the Cuban government for his political beliefs, but the government says it is an internal decision of the church hierarchy. Cuban church officials have yet to comment on Sullivan's impending departure. Father Sullivan has a history of being in countries whose repressive governments receive aid from the United States. He served 17 years in Central America, in Honduras, El Salvador, and Nicaragua, where he served a population closely linked with the U.S. CIA. Father Sullivan says the Cuban government is irked by his posting of the UN Declaration on Human Rights in his parish, as well as his frequent meetings with foreign journalists. In particular, Sullivan said that the government was upset over a late-night meeting he had with reporters from the Boston Globe, Newsday, The Catholic Worker, and Pacifica Radio during the papal visit. Though Father Sullivan says he is being forced out, the Cuban government says he can stay in Cuba until his visa expires in February of next year. But Sullivan says he believes it would be better for the church if he leaves. Sullivan is known for his support of imprisoned Cuban dissidents who staged a hunger strike in Santa Clara before the Pope's visit in January. Sullivan also says he meets regularly with U.S. government officials at his parish in Santa Clara. The officials are from the U.S. Interest Section in Havana, which is known to aid dissident and anti-Castro groups in Cuba. Father Sullivan says he now plans to spend time in New York City before moving on to Honduras later this year. For Our Americas, I'm Jeremy Scahill.
On Tuesday, April 14th, the governor of the state of Virginia defied international law and appeals from the World Court, the International Court of Justice, the Paraguayan government, and Secretary of State Madeleine Albright to execute Paraguayan citizen Angel Francisco Breard by lethal injection. The incident drew the attention of the international community because local officials in Arlington failed to inform Breard of his right to consult his consul, a violation of the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations. Albright later defended the execution, saying that, quote, "There will be criticism, but we believe we did the right thing." Asked about the possibility of the execution putting Americans abroad in danger, she added, quote, "I hope very much that they are not." The Paraguayan government has accused the U.S. of a double standard with regard to respect for human rights. The execution took place in the context of President Clinton's threats to exclude Paraguay from the OAS, the Organization of American States, and to cut off aid if it, quote, "sways from the democratic path," a reference to the turmoil surrounding its upcoming presidential elections.
In Bolivia, President Hugo Banzer has declared a state of siege in the highland region of Chapare. After 2 weeks of clashes with protesting coca farmers that left 5 dead, the army has occupied the region and imposed an unofficial curfew. Troops began moving into communities April 11th to cut down coca fields after removing the tree and stone roadblocks set up by the furious coca farmers' union. The farmers are protesting the government's forcible eradication of plants, saying President Banzer's administration hasn't kept its promise of compensation for destroying their livelihood. Promises of building an industrial complex to provide alternative employment haven't materialized either. At least 300,000 people depend on coca leaf cultivation for their survival. In spite of protest, the government plans to destroy 25,000 acres this year.
In other news from the area, two Ecuadorian protesters are dead after oil workers and peasants clashed with police in an attempt to occupy an Amazon oil field. The Ecuadorian Association of Petroleum Services, an oil workers' union, is striking over the state oil company Petroecuador's unpaid debts. They were joined by rural workers and indigenous groups who were protesting government attempts to privatize their social welfare programs. Protesters fought with army troops when they tried to occupy some of the 42 Amazonian oil wells owned by the state oil company. How much production has been affected is yet to be reported by the oil company. Ecuador is the sixth largest producer of oil in Latin America, and oil finances half of its state budget.
Central American presidents are rallying around Honduras on the issue of deportations. Honduran President Carlos Flores said that the presidents of Costa Rica, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Guatemala, and the Dominican Republic plan to present a petition to President Bill Clinton to stop the deportation of undocumented Honduran immigrants at the April 19th Summit of the Americas. Honduras has complained that Washington grants Nicaraguans without visas permanent residency and allows Salvadorans and Guatemalans to stay in the U.S. for short periods, while Hondurans are summarily deported. We'll have a full report on that story next week.
In Colombia, Environment Minister Eduardo Verano de la Rosa announced that his country would refrain from using tebuthyrone, a powerful herbicide Washington wants his government to use to eradicate coca and opium poppy plantations. Tebuthyrone, which is manufactured in the U.S. by Dow Elanco, remains active for 18 months, seeps into the water table, and kills all vegetation with which it comes into contact. La Rosa stated that, quote, "If everything we've analyzed so far is true, our massive Amazon forests could basically be converted into prairies." Despite the fumigation of 101,500 acres of coca and more than 17,000 acres of opium poppies last year, Colombia now has 196,300 acres of coca plantations, up from almost 166,000 in 1996. Eradication efforts have been cut back 50% since late last month, when the U.S. recommended the grounding of 40 aging Huey helicopters it donated to the National Police.
And those are some of the stories coming out of Latin America this week for Our Americas. I'm Sarah Gill.
And I'm Walter Krockmull.
You're listening to Our Americas, the weekly report on Latin America and the Caribbean. I'm Mario Murillo. In other news this week, Brazil's landless workers' movement, MST, was out in full force on April 17th to commemorate the anniversary of the massacre of 19 Brazilian peasants back in 1996. Organizers of the MST expected up to 80,000 people throughout the country to participate in the protests, which were called in defense of agrarian reform and as a demand to put an end to the violent backlash against leaders of the growing landless movement. Correspondent Steve Dudley prepared this report from Rio de Janeiro.
Since the massacre of 19 of its members 2 years earlier, the landless peasant movement in Brazil, MST, has grown into an organization that represents more than 300,000 people. The movement will use this base to stage demonstrations in 23 different states commemorating the massacre. They are joined by their new ally, the Central Única dos Trabalhadores, CUT. The CUT is a conglomeration of unions that is also recruiting unemployed urban workers. According to the MST, many of those unemployed in the cities want to return to the rural parts of Brazil. For its part, the MST has pledged to support this movement back to the countryside, and they have public support. Public sympathy is due to the fact that 10% of the large landowners own 80% of the land. The unused portion of this land represents more than 300 million acres, an area larger than Colombia and Venezuela combined. Since its formation in the 1980s, the MST has sought to obtain what they call a quick agrarian reform using this land. To this end, they staged a two-day sit-in in 15 different government buildings in the middle of March. They're staging two more on April 17th in the stock markets of Rio de Janeiro and Sao Paulo. The government has said it will not allow more sit-ins and placed heavily armed guards outside these buildings in anticipation of the MST's arrival. The MST is also peacefully occupying land in several different parts of the country. In the state of Pará, they have retaken a piece of land that they held for a time during March until the military police forcibly removed them. That same day, two of their leaders were killed. Initial investigations have placed several of the same police who were involved in the massacre 2 years ago at the scene of the crime. However, there is little promise that these police will be prosecuted. Despite the over 1,000 MST members assassinated since 1985, only 56 cases have been opened, and only 7 people have been imprisoned. Recent developments point towards more conflict in the future. The MST claims that the landowners have organized paramilitary death squads with the help of the police. The large landowners deny this, but some have come out and publicly stated that they will organize civilians to protect them from the MST's principal weapon, mass invasion of land. The MST has responded by digging trenches in the areas that they already occupy. More victims are assured before this conflict is settled. From Rio de Janeiro, I'm Stephen Dudley for Our Americas.
26-year-old Daniel Correa is an MST leader from the southern state of Rio Grande do Sul, where in 1993 one of the movement's most dramatic land grabs took place. He was in New York this week during a stopover on a national tour. I asked him to tell us about the significance of the April 17th MST mobilization commemorating the 1996 massacre. He was interpreted into English by Maria Luisa Mendonça, human rights coordinator of the San Francisco-based Global Exchange.
No dia 17 de abril vão fazer 2 anos do massacre de Eldorado dos Carajás.
Now we are commemorating the 2 years of the massacre that happened in Eldorado dos Carajás, when 19 landless workers were killed. And this killing was done by the police. They were brutally killed. And the mobilizations of the 17th of April are going to be asking for, first of all, the punishment of the killers. And second, we need to gather a large movement, not just to ask for the killing of these 2 members that were killed more recently, but also to the 1,000 workers that have been killed since the 1980s. So we hope to gather thousands and thousands of people in many cities all over the country. And our goal is to gather not just landless workers, but also unemployed urban workers, other segments of workers who live in the countryside, and also homeless people.
Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the massacre that took place and the commemoration which is taking place on the 17th of April. What happened, what was the issues involved, and what happened subsequently to it? You say that there was no of the guilty parties have been prosecuted, nobody has been brought to justice. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and give us some more background about the massacre?
O massacre de Eldorado dos Carajás ocorreu durante uma caminhada que os trabalhadores rurais
What happened at that time was that some families, landless families, were walking. We organized a march, and during that march, the military police came and selectively started to shoot the main leaders of the movement. And what they were asking for was to settle the families that had been waiting for a long time for land. So until now, nobody has brought to trial, and we think that the state government, as well as the federal government, that actually the governor of that state belongs to the same party of our president, Fernando Henrique Cardoso, as well as the military police, should be brought to trial. So, and actually, 2 of the same policemen who participated in the killings at that time also participated in the killings of 2 other leaders of the landless movement just a few weeks ago.
Foi levado a julgamento e muito menos foi preso. Inclusive os policiais militares que participaram desse massacre recentemente, no mês de março, novamente cometeram outro crime, assassinando dois sobreviventes deste massacre de Eldorado dos Carajás nessa mesma região do estado do Pará.
I want to talk a little bit about the movement and give some more background as to the mission and the aims of the MST. But before that, focusing once again and continue to focus on the issue of the violence and the repercussions, the backlash, if you will, against the leaders of the movement. Also recently, and you referred to also the assassination of a number of leaders in late March. Is this an escalation or a renewed stepped up approach to target MST leaders, or is this something that's been ongoing over the past several years?
Sim, a repressão não parou, inclusive ela tem aumentado. E o resultado foi assassinato.
I believe that the violence continues against us, and I think it's increasing, actually. The recent result we saw was what happened in the state of Pará, where two of the survivors of the massacre that happened 2 years ago were brutally killed by the police. And the two of them were coordinating a negotiation between the landless families and the government. Actually, in the process of during the process of the negotiation, the families were moving from one camp to another after a process of negotiating with the landowner. And during that process, one day the military police arrived with some of the big landowners from that region and some governmental officials from the government. And in the presence of the government officials and the police, one of the landowners brutally shot two of our leaders. They were trying to run, but the shots were done in a very brutal way.
Essa escalada da violência, ela surge cada vez de forma mais intensa em função da política do governo Fernando Henrique Cardoso no Brasil.
I think that the violence is the result of recent economic policies implemented by our president, Fernando Henrique Cardoso. Recently, the Minister of Justice declared that the police should expel the families out of the camps, even if they had to use violence. So, and more recently also, the landowners started to hire private militias that actually they work legally under the cover of being security companies, and the government has been supporting this.
E isso tem tido a completa conivência do governo Fernando Henrique Cardoso, tem tido inclusive o seu apoio velado.
I just want to remind the listeners that we're speaking with Daniel Correa, who is the leader of the Brazil's Landless Workers Movement. He actually comes from the area of the southern state of Rio Grande do Sul, and he's in the United States on a national tour sponsored by Global Exchange. And I wanted to go back to that because we did report here on Our Americas on a number of occasions this issue of these paramilitary groups that are legal, that they are coordinated or approved by the state. And it sounds not unlike many other countries in the region that have similar situations where people are struggling for land and they're being confronted by the landowners who have these highly armed and highly trained militias that are in cahoots with the state. What role is the Brazilian military and the Brazilian authorities playing in assisting these paramilitary forces, if you will? I think that was even the term that they used in the reports that we were reading, that are combating the MST. What role is the Brazilian state forces playing in this?
Em relação a esses grupos paramilitares que estão surgindo, eles começaram a partir de uma associação.
So these militias have been organized by the National Association of Agricultural Producers in Brazil. This association was born in the state of São Paulo, but now is spread all over the country. And the objective is really to coordinate a security system to expel the families when they occupy land. So what they do is, if a land is occupied, they can just call an 800 number, and immediately very heavily armed gunmen would get on a plane, and they will be transported to an area everywhere in the country, and they will try to expel the families. So the idea is that the big landowners feel that they need to defend themselves because nobody should occupy their property. But the problem is that in Brazil, the majority of the big pieces of land are not productive, so they're not fulfilling their social function. So we have, as part of the Brazilian Constitution, a law saying that big areas that are not being productive can be expropriated for agrarian reform. So because the Brazilian government is not fulfilling its commitment to agrarian reform, in a way it is supporting the violence and the militia movements organized by the big landowners.
Ou seja, de desapropriar os latifúndios improdutivos, que isso seria muito fácil. Além disso, o governo brasileiro, recentemente, no mês passado,
recently the Brazilian government announced some efforts that supposedly will help to prevent violence in the countryside. But actually, what the government is trying to do is to repress the mobilizations organized by the landless movement. So one of the points that the government now has established is that the military police can expelled the landless families from land occupations as well as from public buildings. Sometimes we also occupy public buildings as a way to pressure the government. Just more recently, the government also has said that the army should help prevent conflict in those areas. And now, 2 weeks ago, and 500 soldiers to Pará, where the killings happened. But actually what they are doing is they are protecting the big landowners, not the small farmers and the landless farmers in the region. In that way, then, I think that our presence is supporting violence in the countryside.
Now, what about the support that the MST has been able to generate outside of the rural sector? Unions, student university groups, also from the indigenous movement in Brazil, what kind of coalitions have been built? Have there been any movements that's going to be much broader to generate support, given that the problem of land and agrarian reform has always been and continues to be such a major issue in Brazil?
Realmente, o problema da reforma agrária no Brasil é um problema histórico.
So we know that agrarian reform historically has been a concern for the Brazilian society. But today, just 25% of the population lives in the countryside. So the MST knows that it's very important to get the support of the society as a whole in order to achieve agrarian reform. So we need to pressure the government to realize agrarian reform. And now, on the 17th of April, it's an example of a mobilization that we are going to organize, and that we are going to count with the support of other segments, such as unions, unemployed workers from the cities, popular movements, and we know that it's fundamental because agrarian reform in Brazil would help improve living conditions in the cities, would help deal with the problem of unemployment and also hunger.
So
these alliances were also shown last year, after a year of the massacre on the 17th of April, we organized a huge march, and we arrived in Brasilia with 100,000 people from different segments. So that showed an enormous support. At the same time, there was a survey that showed that more than 80% of the Brazilian society supports agrarian reform, and 70% supports land occupation. So people know that agrarian reform will help develop the countryside. And so the government is feeling this pressure and is trying to deal with the situation, especially this year, because it's an election year, and our president, Fernando Henrique Cardoso, wants to be reelected.
Esse sentimento de apoio da sociedade tem sido muito importante para colocar o governo Fernando Henrique Cardoso contra a parede, ou seja, para pressioná-lo para que comece a realizar um processo maior de reforma agrária. E principalmente neste ano, que é um ano de eleição no Brasil, onde Fernando Henrique Cardoso quer de todas as formas se reeleger e sabe que para isso vai precisar dos votos da população brasileira.
Now, what about the indigenous movement? Because I think the other big area of concern that people have vis-a-vis land in Brazil and the failure of the government to fulfill pledges and fulfill promises that it's made to the people are related directly to the indigenous movement. Is there any connection? What can you tell us about the work? Is there any kind of work being coordinated in conjunction with the Indian movement in Brazil, who've also been struggling for their land and their territorial claims that they've had for years?
Existe esse contato através do de um fórum, né,
so,
nacional.
Yes, we work together with the indigenous movement. We have an organization called the National Forum for Agrarian Reform, and they do participate in that because we know that agrarian reform also has to include the demarcation of indigenous lands. But unfortunately, the Brazilian government is supporting the invasion of indigenous lands by big multinational corporations. And just recently, we saw that a case in the state of Espírito Santo where a Catholic priest, who was a Dutch priest, had his visa denied because or reduced from 2 years to 2 days. So they're trying to get him out of the country because he was helping an indigenous community in the state of Espírito Santo to fight against a timber company that invaded their land. So we think it's very important to create alliances with indigenous people, and we believe that agrarian reform has to happen for all of us.
Entendemos que a forma que existe de enfrentarmos as multinacionais dentro do Brasil.
So, yes, we think that it's very important to create a broad movement to fight against the multinational corporations that try to influence economic policy in our country and actually have a big influence in our country. So, in order to do that, we need to include not just rural workers, but also urban workers, indigenous people, and all the popular movements, because we are the ones who need to determine the future of our country. Of course, this is not easy. That's why we need to create this broad alliance and create a radical change in terms of structures of power in our country, and propose an alternative economic project that will include the participation of the society as a whole.
Enfrentamento a essas multinacionais, que não é um enfrentamento fácil, ela deve se dar exatamente na aliança concreta da sociedade, né, em busca de um projeto alternativo para o povo brasileiro, um projeto alternativo.
Daniel Correa is a leader of Brazil's landless workers movement, the MST, from the southern state of Rio Grande do Sul. He was interpreted by Maria Luisa Mendonça, a human rights coordinator of the San Francisco-based Global Exchange. And you're listening to Our Americas, the weekly report on Latin America and the Caribbean. Americas is produced at the studios of WBAI Pacifica Radio in cooperation with NACLA, the North American Congress on Latin America. NACLA publishes a bi-monthly journal, Report on the Americas. Its latest issue is entitled The War Within, Counterinsurgency in Chiapas and Colombia. If you want more information, you can call NACLA at 212-870-3146. That's 212-870-3146. And if you have any questions or comments for us, you can send us an email at mmcompa@igc.org. That's mmcompa@igc.org. I'm Mario Murillo. Stay with us.